Hey, everybody, Tony Brisky. Obviously, things are very crazy right now, and having something to escape with mentally for our mental health is very, very important. So what I want to do on the weekends right now as we're all going through this is give you some extra content. On Saturdays and Sundays, we're going to release a live version of our episode that we recorded during the week through a Facebook Live session. Be sure to follow us on Facebook to find out when we're doing those live so you can call in live and participate. Also, each week, I'm going to grab an EPP episode from our archive of more than 300. We'll pick one a week and put that out there for you as well in its entirety so you have something else to enjoy and listen to. And if you like those EPP episodes and you want access to all 300 of them, and there's brand new ones every single week, if you want access to all of those, just sign up to be an extra podcast person. If you can, it's only $5 a month. Get all the extra stuff. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to do just that. These EPP ones that we're going to be dropping for you go way back in our archive. Several years back. These are nowhere near the latest episodes, but there's some good ones from many years back. So I'll shut up now. Thank you guys for listening. If you can support the program at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories, that's greatly appreciated. Hope you enjoy the audio, and hopefully this gives you about an hour or so of just thinking about something else.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. An EPP 106 is what we are up to at Real Ghost Stories Online. Line on today's EPP 106, a mountain resort holds a mountain of fear for its night shift employees. A young girl finds something in the basement of her rental home that she is too afraid to share with the police. And hospitals are where life begins and ends for some residents, but for one employee, it's where he learns about the beginning of the end. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brisky joining you once again.
Hello.
Hello, and how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm ready to start reading these stories. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of, there's not a lot of stories today, but they're long stories today.
They are.
So I think we'll just kind of jump right into that because I was looking at the page count is what I always look at to tell me, kind of just my guide. Mm-hmm. Going, okay, well, you know, this is about how long it'll take to read the stories, and, you know, just kind of theoretically look at that, and it kind of tells me. And I don't know if this is a record today or not.
It may be. I go by the number of words.
Sure.
So we were up in the 8,000s.
Yeah.
About 8,500.
I'm looking at 220 pages when I look at the font that I put it at. I'm putting it at font 105. No, I'm
kidding. It's pretty big,
there
though.
There are three words a page.
Yeah.
I have it kind of at like a teleprompter. Mm-hmm. Style size, so I'm not constantly stumbling, or I'm stumbling less, if you will. So that's what we're looking at today. I'm excited about that. 855-853-4802, of course, our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online, to share your real ghost stories with us. And Jenny had a nice spooky thing that I got to share with her earlier in the day. I went outside, and I was recording the promo for this very show.
All I heard were footsteps and gravel.
Yeah.
And there's not supposed to be anybody out there.
And then did you hear me squeal a little bit? Did you hear me go, ee!
No. Were you trying to call foxes?
No, I wasn't trying to call foxes. Okay. I just saw a whole bunch of bat poop.
Ew.
It was, I didn't sit in it, and I didn't really squeal. But I did kind of go, ew, that's not good. And then I looked up, and, because our porch literally kind of goes out into the wilderness, and the lower portion, which there's nothing under there yet except for gravel and some lawn chairs that we haven't really figured out what we're going to do with yet because we haven't finished anything off down there. It's just kind of storing outdoor stuff down there right now. But I walked down there to record the promo, and I looked at a couple of the chairs, and there's the little bat poop.
I don't think I've ever seen bat poop.
Bat poop, da 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 da. Well, I even Googled it just to make sure it was bat poop because that's what I suspected it to be. It's a little bit larger than mouse poop,
okay.
And it's all like kind of in one condensed area. So what that tells me is there's been some hanging right there
right, literally where you are out that window, bats hang out at night and they just kind of perch there upside down.
Okay.
And they shit.
That's great.
on our chairs.
Exactly what I wanted to know.
So, yeah, there you go. We should go out there at night sometime and just relax. I'm like, is it raining? This isn't rain.
I haven't been out there in the evening since I saw them flying around.
Got to get it screened in up there.
Yeah.
When that would be really creepy, though. Like, what if a bat flew into the screen, went through the screen, got stuck in the screen, and its head's just, like, stuck through it, and it has its mouth open. It's like, ah!
That's where you hit it with a frying pan and fling it out of the screen.
That would be very creepy.
Yeah.
My dad, we had a bat when I was a kid, and I think it was rabid because it was daylight hours, and it was sitting in our driveway, just sitting there mm-hmm. with its wings over its head. And my friend tripped right next to it, and she thought it was a leaf mm-hmm. at first. And so did I, because it was fall, and there's leaves everywhere. And like, oh, no, that's a bat. And so we got up, and my dad got rid of it mm-hmm. because it shouldn't have been there. There was clearly something not right. Ugh. He tried to like bump it to make it just go away, and it didn't. It just looked up at him, and it made a screaming noise.
Oh, that's great.
And I will not ever forget it. I was standing a little ways away watching, and it looks up, and its little mouth opens, and it's yeah, it's creepy.
Okay,
creepy sight. Anyhow. On to today's stories. No more bat talk?
No, I'm done.
No more bat talk.
I'm done.
Luke writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. I was so very excited when you guys read my story about the Cold Stone incident on an EPP episode and even named the episode The Lullaby. It was great hearing my story on my favorite podcast, and the art for that EPP was spot on and very creepy. Anyway, I mentioned previously everywhere I work, it seems to be haunted. I don't know if maybe there's some underlying subconscious reasoning for this, like maybe I'm just drawn to haunted places and I just don't know it, or possibly I am just very unlucky. Anyway, I've decided to share another story with the two of you. This one is about my current place of work, a timeshare resort in a small Colorado ski town. I'm the front office supervisor here, but we have been down a night auditor for about 4 months, so I am basically the full-time night auditor since I am the only person who knows how to do it besides our part-time night auditor. This is going to be a long story because a lot has happened during the year and a half I've worked here, and I'm of course going to start in the most logical starting point, the beginning. Please note that while I'm starting at the beginning, things have started escalating in the past 2 months, but we'll get into that a little later. Before I begin, I need to explain a little bit about this property so that everything makes sense. My resort is made up of 5 buildings, building A, B, C, D, and E. D and E are right on the road and 7 floors high. A, B, and C are right behind E and D along the pond. They're significantly smaller and only 3 floors high. All the paranormal activity I've experienced personally or have been told about by others has occurred in either E or D, never A, B, or C. First time I realized something strange and possibly paranormal could be residing here was in July of 2015. I got a call from a guest staying in the D building. She was having issues with her DVD player to work, so I went up to the room to help her out. Once I was in the room, the guest who was with her younger daughter started telling me that in the middle of the night, she heard stomping above her room, and it startled both her and her daughter awake, and it lasted for about 30 seconds. This is a completely normal thing for people staying in hotels, except this particular guest was staying on the 7th floor. The building she stayed in is only 7 floors high. I apologized and told her that was really strange, but I'd follow up with the LP team to make sure no one was up there because they shouldn't have been doing anything up there in the middle of the night. The guest then stated that she was sensitive to the paranormal and that she was positive that it wasn't a living or being above her room last night. She then continued to tell me that when they woke up in the morning, all the cupboards and drawers were wide open. Me being skeptical, I asked her, "Do you want me to get engineering to come up here with a level to make sure the cabinets haven't shifted over time?" That's when she looked at me with all seriousness and said, "Luke, you do not understand. All of the cupboards and drawers were open this morning, not just the ones in the kitchen. They were open in the bathroom, the kitchen, the TV stand in the living room, which is standing completely opposite the kitchen, opening the opposite direction. The drawers in the kitchen open. This is not something that can be explained by gravity. I feel a presence here. Once again, I apologize to her, being as professional about this incident as I could be, and I offered to move her room if it freaked her out at all. And she declined the room move since she was only staying one more night and didn't feel as if the spirits meant her any harm. I came into this room to help her with the DVD player, so while we were having a conversation, I was standing directly in front of the TV stand facing the front door in the kitchen. I was about to leave when I saw two of the cabinet doors in the kitchen slowly creep open, and the TV stand drawer at the same time hit me in the back of my ankles. The guest said, "I know you don't believe me, but there's something here and not just in this room. I felt it as soon as I stepped foot in your property." Looking down at the drawer behind me, kind of in shock, I said, "Ma'am, I believe you now. Are you positive you want to stay in this room?" She said that it was fine, and I left and went back to the front desk, which is located in E. Honestly, after that point, I kind of ignored anything weird that happened. I thought that maybe if I don't acknowledge the presence, it wouldn't come after me, like what had happened in Coldstone, where myself and my coworkers acknowledged the presence, and it just got worse. So here at the hotel, I just ignored it. This worked for a while, until I started having to cover night audit shifts back in January. The first time something major happened was one cold winter night in January, where the sliding glass doors in the lobby that separate the lobby from the airlock, which is two large heavy oak doors that lead outside. These will be important later. Well, the sliding glass doors kept opening by themselves. It was the middle of the night. I was behind the desk, and I was nowhere near the sensors, and there was no one in the lobby to activate them. And for most of the night, they kept opening and closing as they pleased. The same night, I went to go use the restroom, and as soon as I exited the door that locks the employee area from the guest area, one of the elevators just opened. There was no one in it. No one around to press the button. The timing was eerie. However, I just remembered what the lady who stayed on the 7th floor, D, told me. They do not mean us any harm. And honestly, up until this point, everything I had seen and heard was innocent enough, so I named the ghost Bert. That night I said to the employee, to the empty space, "Hello, I know that something is here and that you want me to know. If it's all right, I'm going to call you Bert. It's not okay. Please open the sliding glass door. I know you can do it. You've been doing it all night." The door stayed closed. So I assumed that the spirits were fine with Bert. Everything after this point consisted of innocent door opening. Sometimes things would move or fall off flat surfaces, but nothing nefarious. Until about 2 months ago, that's when things started getting darker. To my core, I do not believe that this darkness is Bert's. Everything that has happened that I acknowledged as Bert was innocent, almost playful, like he just wanted us to know he was here and wanted to be acknowledged. I think it's some new entity that was attached to a guest and decided to chill out here after the guest left, or maybe Bert has transformed into something no longer human. Honestly, I don't know. Except that I do know this is not the Bert I spoke to in January who likes to open electronic doors and move your pen. I'd never felt threatened or afraid of Bert after I acknowledged his existence. He was just a normal part of life working here, but now I can feel a dark, heavy presence here every night as the sun goes down. Then it leaves around 6 a.m. and the air feels lighter again, and it's always right at 6 a.m. I'm not the only one that has experienced this charge. Our main LP officer, Evan, who is the only other employee here at night besides the night auditor, has expressed to me the feeling of heaviness. He's experienced strange happenings as well. All the following has happened within the last 2 months. One night I was watching the cameras at about 2 a.m. and in the activity center, which is in the D building, there was a person walking around with all the lights off. Our security cameras all have low light capabilities, but the person just looked like a dark shadow walking around. You see, this is strange because the activity center closes at 10 p.m. and the doors are all locked. So I called Evan on the radio and said, "Hey, Evan, did you forget to lock the activity center? There's someone just walking around in there." Looked back at the camera and the person was gone. So I called Evan back. "The guest just left the room. Just make sure all the doors are locked." About 10 minutes later, Evan comes to the desk, pale as a ghost, out of breath. "Luke, all the doors were locked, and as soon as I walked in, the DJ station started blasting music. I turned off the DJ station and locked the doors back up, but I'm not going back in there tonight. The whole time I was in there, I felt like someone was watching me. I told them that was fine and that we could just get the AM engineer to open it back up in the morning. Since this point, the activity center has been a strange epicenter of paranormal activity. Funny side note, but maybe the spirits think that the activity center is for paranormal activity. I'm just kidding. It does occur everywhere on property, but it seems to be the worst in that room. I no longer enter that room even when the sun is up. Evan avoids it as much as possible. Strange happenings just revolve around that room. The DJ station turns itself on all the time. One night, Evan decided to unplug it, thinking it was a wiring error. That night, when he did his 3 a.m. rounds, the DJ station still started blasting music when he walked in. It was still unplugged. I see orbs, shadows, the dark figure, and strange lights on the activity center camera all the time. The last time I personally stepped foot in that room was about a month ago during a normal shift for me. One of the few day shifts I get these days. It was probably about 10 p.m. and I went in there to turn off the movie we had been showing for movie night. No one was there. While I was getting the DVD out of the player, I heard a noise behind me on the other side of the room, and one of the Xbox TVs was flashing the Pac-Man game over message across the screen. The Xboxes are right by the door I just walked through not 2 minutes ago, and both Xbox TVs were off when I walked in. I booked it out of the room and have not returned since. About 3 weeks ago, I was just sitting at the desk running my night audit reports when I hear one of the heavy oak doors begin to open. So I, of course, stand up and look over, waiting for someone to come in, and the door continued to slowly open until it was about 2 feet open, and it just slammed shut. I ran over to the cameras, and there was nothing there and nothing to explain why the door opened, and these doors are big and heavy. There's no way that this was the wind. The same night, when Evan was delivering our daily activity schedule, he was putting one under the door of our executive offices, and something ripped the paper out of his hand and into the office. He radioed me to get up there and go into the offices with him, so I did. When we entered the office, it was empty, and the paper was on the complete opposite side of the office from the door. We left it there and avoided the third floor for the rest of the night. About 2 weeks ago, I thought that maybe I could figure out what this thing wants by talking to it, so I turned on my recorder on my phone and I said, "I know there are spirits here. Please tell me what you want. I want to give you guys some space. I'm going to leave my phone here and go back up to the front. If you have anything to say, please do so. Just talk near my phone and I'll listen to it later." I closed the door to the back office to leave them in peace, and I let my phone sit there for about 15 minutes. I went back to retrieve it and, of course, started listening immediately. About 5 minutes of dead air go by when I hear what sounded like, "Help me." It was very quiet and hard to hear, but it sounded like an old man, and he sounded like he was in pain. Was this Bert? Then I heard popping and my phone goes black. I was luckily able to turn my phone back on, but when I tried to reopen the audio file, I kept getting an error message that said corrupted data. Freaky, right? Last night was the final straw, and really what prompted me to send this in to you guys. Last night I was walking up the stairs from the break room back to the desk, and I walked through the shipping room. In the shipping room, there's a stand-up popcorn machine that we put out on the weekends for our guests. In the glass of the popcorn machine, I could see my reflection clearly. Behind my reflection, there was a tall, dark figure following me. Me, being a scaredy cat, I jumped in fear while turning around to look behind me, and of course, I fall right into the concrete floor. There was nothing there because there's nothing ever there when you try to look with a naked eye. This part drives me nuts. I've only ever seen this thing in reflections or on cameras, but never with my own eyes. Tony and Jenny, I'm about at my wit's end with this. I've become so paranoid when I'm at work. I always feel like I'm being watched, and I'm just so anxious whenever I'm at work. Recently, I started to get these overwhelming emotions out of nowhere, and they go away as quickly as they come on. I'll just be running reports mindlessly, and suddenly a feeling of sadness will wash over me, and it's so overwhelming, like I had just lost a loved one, and then it's gone, and everything is back to normal. In the past, I have a sudden feeling like this is a haunted place, and I always just figure that maybe I'm slightly empathetic, but these feelings here are stronger than any I've ever felt before, and they feel almost intentional, like something wants me to feel these intense emotions. I'm moving back to Oregon in October, and I'm very excited to get out of this place. Hopefully nothing follows me, and I can find a normal workplace, because this is just physically and mentally exhausting. And while I only need to hold out for 1.5 more months, sometimes it just feels like too much.
You know, he mentioned that all the activity was in buildings D and E. And he said in the first part where he's talking about the layout that those two were on the main street front and then the rest were further back on the property.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think something used to be in that spot.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If there were to be something, you'd likely have it closer to the roadway.
Yeah, I would think so.
My only other thought on that, and it's, you know, as far as trying to get it to go away, I don't think she's going to have any luck there.
Mm-mm.
You know, with making this stuff stop. So you're almost out of there. I know it's overwhelming and draining, but that you can either leave or try and tough it out a little bit longer. I think just trying to try and go back to what the that first guest told you. They don't mean you any harm. They may have strong emotions. They may bring on a lot of things. But, you know, I'm not getting demonic. I'm getting mischievous.
Yeah.
Out of this. You know, certainly draining.
Mm-hmm.
My thought on this, because we have a lot of stories of haunted hotels, haunted resorts, haunted things of that nature. Are these places frequently haunted because in death, human ghosts are thinking, well, I would go there on vacation. Now I can go anywhere I want. So they seek out places, if they're able to go wherever they want, that they would have gone in real life. Just like on a vacation. Go to a resort. I'm going to go hang out at the resort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still thinking like a human.
Yeah.
But in death, there's, you know, I'll go here. I would never have been able to afford this in real life. Now I'm going to go check it out for myself. I wonder if that's ever some of it, where it's just, I'm going to go to locations I would have liked to have gone to in life, but did not.
Okay. I think it's more so there's so much emotion tied with hotels. Because,
sure,
you know, a lot of large events happen there. People go there for happy reasons,
mm-hmm,
sad reasons.
Sure.
You know, rarely is it just, I mean, more so now in our day and age with people that travel constantly for work,
mm-hmm,
is it just another, oh, ho-hum, going to the hotel? A lot of times,
yeah,
hey, I'm on a vacation, or wife's mad at me and I got to stay here, you know.
Sure.
Things like that. And I think more emotionally tied.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, essentially, it's kind of a battery.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if that's one of, because I would do that.
You would just go vacationing?
If I had, like, free reign to wander anywhere, yeah, I mean, I'd hang out with my family and stuff, but I'd go on my own adventures as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, I'll go check out this place. I'm curious. I'd be the ghost that starts haunting places that are brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be like, well, how can this possibly be haunted? It's like, nothing's happened here yet.
Sure.
I'm just a curious ghost, and I wanted to see how it's going. You know, I wonder how much of that actually goes on. Good story. Thank you for writing in and sharing that with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Our next story on today's EPP 106 comes into us from Jennifer. I am Jennifer from Birmingham, Washington. I recently started listening to your podcast, and I love it. I've had encounters with spirits all my life. Today, I will start with my experiences as a child living in what I call the Demon House. Recently, I did some research on the house, and it was built in 1920. And being a rental property that has had several occupants before my family, my mom, dad, and older brother lived there in 1988 to 1984. During that time, I was of the age 2 to 8. My third earliest life memory I can recall was when I was about 3 years old and I was sleeping by myself upstairs, and my parents slept on the first floor and my brother had a room in the basement. I was awoken by a loud sound. I looked around the moonlit room and suddenly an open drawer slammed shut by itself. I'm not sure if I really knew what a spirit was yet, but I did know that a drawer slamming shut by itself was not normal. I ran and climbed into my parents' bed, and things being moved, hit, or slammed throughout the house by an unseen force was a daily occurrence. My brother and mother would witness things, too. Once, the three of us were in the living room, and something happened that I saw many times before. We heard something hit the side of one of the bird cages, then one of the doors opened, and it was like an invisible hand reached in and just waved it around, causing all the bird toys and food and water dishes to move around, and the birds just flipped out. That was one of the times I remembered my mother explaining to me what a bad spirit or demon was. One night, the spirits began physically attacking me. I was asleep alone upstairs, and I was awoken to someone pulling very hard on my hair. I yelled out for whomever to stop. I reached out behind me to try to release my hair. However, the only thing my hand came in contact with was like a thick static electricity. After several seconds, the spirit let go of my hair. Many nights I would wake up to being beat in the back of my behind so hard that I couldn't move or get up. Also, sometimes I would hear something moving around in my mattresses. Then a fist from inside the mattress would punch me. A fist from inside the mattress would punch me hard. We had one restroom on the first floor. For me to get into it from upstairs, I'd have to go past the dining room, and every time I had to use the restroom at night, I would see a strange man sitting at the dining room table. He's always in the same spot. There was a window next to the table, so with the street lights and moonlight, I could see him well. He was large and looked kind of fat and had dark skin. He looked like he had buggles on his face, kind of like the Elephant Man. He wore a robe and had loosely wrapped turban on his head. He would just sit at the table, drinking out of a strange cup. It kind of was like the ones in the movie Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Sometimes he'd turn to look at me, and sometimes he wouldn't. I wasn't sure what to make of him at first. I remember looking in our kitchen cabinets for his cup, but never finding it. One time, I asked my parents why a man would come at night instead of the dining room. They just said, "What man?" That's when I started realizing that this man was a spirit. Other than seeing the spirit in the dining room every night, I had only three other incidents of seeing spirits in the house. One night, my mother and I, for some reason, slept upstairs together on a mattress on the floor. That morning, I woke up and saw my mother looking up at the ceiling. She then slowly turned her head and gave me the ugliest glare. I turned to look at my brother, thinking if he was awake, I could ask him why Mom was so upset, and he was asleep. When I turned my head back, my mother was not there. It scared me that a spirit could make itself look like someone else. I believe it was the same spirit. It also would imitate my mother's voice. Sometimes, if I was playing in my room by myself and my mother being downstairs, I would hear a voice calling my name. It would sound like my mom, but would be long and dragged out. I knew it wasn't my mom, but sometimes I would go to her just for the confirmation. Another sighting of the spirit was one night when my brother started sleeping upstairs with me because lots of scary things would happen to him in his bedroom in the basement, and he didn't want to sleep alone anymore. The upstairs consisted of two connected rooms. My room didn't have a door, just an entryway. My brother's bed was outside of my entryway against the wall. My bed was on the other side of the wall from him. My brother could see into most of my room from his bed, and we had just turned out the lights to go to bed, and we were talking to each other. A movement from the far end of the room caught my eye. I saw something blue starting to slowly come out from a small crawl space at floor level. As it emerged, I saw that it was round and had a face. It was the size of a large beach ball. Floated up to where it was, like 5 feet in the air, and started slowly floating towards me. I told it to go away. The entity laughed and said it was going nowhere. Its voice had an ugly, deep male voice. Again, I said for it to leave me alone, and it tauntingly told me a few times that he was going to get me, and laughed again. When he was only a few feet from me, I wanted to run, but I was frozen with fear. I then screamed at the top of my lungs. My mother heard from downstairs and quickly turned the light on from the bottom of the stairs. And once the lights came on, the spirit disappeared. I asked my brother if he saw the round blue spirit, and he said he heard it talking to me, but his eyes were following another demon looking spirit that was near the floor by my bed. He said he saw what looked like a skull with flames, and it quickly retreated into my Minnie Mouse toy tent when the light was turned on. After that, I was too freaked out to go in that tent, until one day I wanted to retrieve a toy from the inside. I hesitated before entering, and once inside the tent started shaking. I quickly came out and heard a growl behind me. I turned back, and a black, very angry-looking figure emerged from the tent. I ran away, and it chased me to the stairs, growling. Worried about taking too much of your time, so I'll mention just a couple more occurrences that scared me a great deal. Two very bizarre occurrences happened in the basement. The basement was very scary, and often while there I would see boxes and things moving around by themselves. One time I was there with my brother, and we were heading to his old room to retrieve something from my parents that was being stored there. Before we reached the door, I felt a weird change in environment, like the air became heavier. I then saw what was like the room change. In front of me appeared a third doorway I'd never seen before. My brother and I were curious and opened the door, and inside we saw a room with a man sitting on a bed. He had a shaved head and he was Caucasian. He was strumming a guitar and looked like he was singing, but I heard no sound coming from him nor his guitar. He did not seem to notice my brother and I. The wall was covered with strange symbols that I'd never seen before, including what I now know are pentagrams. Yes, I know that pentagrams can be used for good and bad. After a few seconds, everything went back to normal. The house had been remodeled a few times, so I believe that we got a glimpse from the past occupant in this old room. Wonder if there were so many demons in that house because of this man's activities. Maybe he practiced devil worshipping or summoned demons. The other strange occurrence, I believe, is connected to the last one I mentioned. My father asked me to get something from the food storage in the basement. Went by myself, not to my liking, and grabbed the can of food. When I turned to head for the stairs, I saw the carpet move. The carpet was not stapled or glued to the floor. I then saw a corner lift up. My first reaction was that I wanted to run. However, it was like someone wanted me to move the carpet. I lifted the carpet, and in the middle of the floor, there was a black metal grate with a handle. I wanted to see inside, so I lifted the grate, and it was heavy for my then 5-year-old self, but was able to open it all the way. As I opened it, a rush of cold, musky air flew out. I remember the smell of the air was very strong and unpleasant. I peered into the dark opening. The opening went down about 10 feet. It was very dark, but I could see a person inside. I could see clothing, and the top of the head was a skull with patches of long dark hair. I was so scared that I slammed the grate shut, put the carpet back, and ran. Never talked about it to anyone because I was little and too scared. About 10 years later, I told my mother. I've never told the authorities because I don't want anyone thinking I'm crazy. Plus, I don't know if what I saw was an image from the past or if the body actually is still in that hole in the ground. My theory is that the man, who I think conjured up the demons in the house, murdered someone and threw the person in that hole. Maybe the spirit, who I feel was female, wanted me to see what happened to her. When I was 8, we moved out of that house into a new one we had built in another town. I was so happy to leave that awful demon house behind me. I remember enjoying the feeling of my new house. It had a very light feeling compared to the heavy, sick feeling I get in the demon house. However, after a year or so, I began to experience spirits in my new house and in my grandmother's house. I've never stopped having experiences. However, nothing that compares to what went on in the demon house. I can write in again in the future and tell you about more of my experiences if you and Jenny would like. I apologize because I know this was a long letter, but this was a condensed version of events that occurred. Anyways, thank you very much for reading my stories.
Okay, I think we all really want to know if that was truly a body in there or something that was just there trying to scare her.
It's really difficult to say with all of the other things that she had experienced,
mm-hmm.
What it was.
Sure.
Without going back and confirming it, it could very well have just been some sort of imagery. What I wonder about, I mean, she said that her sibling also was experiencing the stuff too. Because mm-hmm. at first I was wondering, is this just a very sensitive person that just has super sensitivity and unfortunately that has to experience all the bad that's going on here? But it sounds like it was showing itself to other people. I'd be interested to hear the take on what the parents experienced in the house.
Yeah.
Or was this just targeting the children? which is just trying to torment the kids alone. I don't know. I would say the person probably has, you know, a bit more of a sensitivity than others. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing by how extreme some of that stuff was in the house, almost anybody I think that would have been in her shoes probably would have experienced something.
Yeah. And sometimes the sensitivity can be so strong that you don't know if it's real or not, especially if you're little.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering if you peeled off the wallpaper or the paint or whatever that was in that house, what you would find, if you'd find some of those things that she had in that wasn't a dream.
It was kind of just a vision.
Yeah, in that vision.
Mm-hmm.
What that would look like. How would you handle that?
It was a rental, I'd be gone.
Well, let's say it's this house. Let's say you're removing some beautiful wallpaper, some beautiful faux rosebush wallpaper, and which, by the way, I found the mother load of it. And
that's
just
great.
In case you want to put more up.
No.
Just in case.
No, I think there will be a resurgence of wallpaper, but it won't be here.
I'm going to sell it on eBay then, because it's some beautiful stuff. Anyway, let's say you were removing wallpaper and you came across something like that in a room. Pentagrams on the wall or something. Just something. Very unsettling. How do you handle that? And you don't have any paranormal activity going on. You're just finding the shit. That's all.
If I don't have anything going on, I think I would cover it up.
Would you cut the drywall out that it's on, or would you just kind of really cover it up?
Kills it.
New kills with holy water.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
We've talked about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be great. I mean, I wouldn't leave the property. I just don't know how much I would then demo that piece out.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's does it make a difference if you demo the piece out? Is it kind of like it's more so the thought and the action than it is the actual? It's like a Ouija. Well, you know, almost. It's, you know, it's not so much the board, it's how it's being used.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought it's somewhere along the lines we talked about sometimes people use pentagrams as protection.
Well, if it's not inverted.
Yeah.
I mean, so yes, it can be depending on how it's used. I would venture to say in most cases if it's on a wall or something like that and kind of weird, it's probably not the greatest intentions. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I'm just kind of going to go with what's more likely going on there.
Well, if you don't have any activity going on, I think I'd leave good enough alone.
Yeah. I could you stir it up if you get rid of it? That's
what I'm wondering.
That's the other thing. Would you go for it with more wallpaper?
I don't know what I'd do.
What if you discovered that the entity only wanted wallpaper on it? It didn't like paint. It didn't like Martha Stewart brand paint. It didn't like any brand of paint. Mm-hmm. Dutch Boy, Bear, Ethan Allen. I'm just kind of random paint brands. It only liked really bad 1989 rosebush wallpaper.
That's when we have to do an exorcism of the house. Because I don't negotiate when it comes to that.
You don't negotiate with demons when it comes to wallpaper.
No, I don't.
That's a good one. You have to say it as well. I don't negotiate with demons when it comes to wallpaper.
I don't.
You have to say it.
I don't want to say it.
It's going to make a great shit Jenny
make it,
says.
You're going to make it a button, and then you're just going to randomly press it.
Like the guy that's coming up on an episode the other day where it was, what did he say?
Peekaboo.
Peekaboo.
Yeah.
You'll hear that in about a week or so in an episode. And his saying is just as creepy as the story itself. Yeah. I don't negotiate with demons when it comes to wallpaper. I love that.
Okay, good.
All right. Let's go to Jesus. He writes in, hey again, Tony and Jenny. This is Jesus from Texas with more and another supernatural tale. Hope you all enjoy. I reckon I was 18 at the time this took place. Circumstances had forced me to drop out of college, and I was adrift in the vast ocean that is life. Work was plentiful. It was the only thing in my life at the time that was meaningful. I'd gotten a job at our local hospital through a friend. Wasn't much, job at the kitchen washing dishes and such. I took it for what it was, but also hung the hopes of advancement upon it. It was notoriously hard to land a job at the hospital, and the foot in the door could lead to better places. I'd be lying if I said I was in a good place. I had become a bit of a recluse, working as much as I possibly could before going home and retreating to a life of escapism inside chat rooms and video games. Work was work, the same routine played out over and over again in the seemingly infinite cycle. What was, to most, tedious, made me feel secure. It anchored me to something and gave something to look forward to. Now, I ain't never seen the most social, or never been the most social person alive, but I can fake it pretty well. It was due to the fact that I could turn on some semblance of a personality when necessary, that I was offered a promotion of sorts. I was allowed to deliver the food carts and trays to the different floors of the hospital. This, of course, meant more social interaction, which I wasn't crazy about, but the pay was better, and my goal was to move up in hopes of finding something that fit me. What I had not realized at the time was that one of my floors was the hospice floor. For any listener not familiar with what the hospice floor is, it's basically the end-of-life care. This didn't really register to me at the time. I was doing a job, simple as that. I worked day in and day out, in different routine, but very much the same. I bring the trays up to their respective floors and hand them out to the patients one by one. Most of them wanted to be left alone. I couldn't blame them. They just wanted their food. I ain't too sure when I started to notice it. It was a couple of months into my new position when I boarded the elevator and pushed the button to head to the 8th floor, the hospice care floor. The elevator door opened with a ding, and as soon as it did, the feeling of what I now refer to as death rushed in like a blast of cold air. I felt immediate claustrophobic and quickly rushed out of the elevator with my cart. That relieved my claustrophobia, as it seemed that the feeling dissipated and covered to cover the entire floor. Butterflies waltzed within my stomach as anxiety dug its claws into me. My body protested with each step, yet I knew I had a job to do. I approached the nurse's station as per usual. "You all right, hon?" I heard a nurse on the floor cast me a worried glance. Apparently my anxiety had affected my appearance to the point that it caused a medical professional to be worried for me. "Yeah, I'm good," I lied through my teeth, and without further conversation, got down to the business at hand. The first room held an older gentleman who was struggling with cancer. He lost a fight both physically and mentally. I was simply waiting for his number to be drawn. "Hello, young man," he greeted me as always, seated in his chair by the window. I waved in response, choosing to keep my interactions to a minimum. "How's the weather?" He's always insisted on engaging me. "Cold," I voiced as I left his food on the table and walked out. "Before you think me cruel, understand that these patients in particular were on very limited time. To invest yourself in them emotionally was basically setting yourself up for a heartache. I was not interested in bringing that sort of harm to myself. If you still think me cruel, well, we'll agree to disagree." I went room to room, but was preempted by a couple of nurses who simply shook their heads at me and waved me along. I finished my deliveries and returned to my cart. "He just passed away about 20 minutes ago," she stated, despite me not asking. I didn't really know what to say, so I said the first thing that came to mind. "That sucks," I stated blandly as I took my cart and boarded the elevator. I gasped for breath as the elevator door closed. That horrible feeling lingered in the pit of my stomach as I returned to the kitchen and readied the next cart. Lunch rolled around, and as was habit, I had worked well into it. It wasn't until my supervisor forced me to take a break that I actually did. For going an actual lunch, I decided that the vending machine was as good a place as any to get some nutrition. The kitchen was in the second floor, and the vending machines were located on the first, which meant I'd have to take the elevator down to the first floor. I pressed the call button and waited. It was taking longer than expected, considering the button indicated the elevator was on the first floor. I pressed the button again, patience not being my strong suit at the time, and again, I waited. As the minutes passed, I was becoming annoyed as I was ready to take the stairs. A familiar ding of the elevator sounded out, and the door opened. I was once again hit with a heavy feeling that I had encountered the hospice floor. It felt like it was going to barrel me over. I struggled to breathe for a moment, and the butterflies returned. Worse yet, it felt like that feeling had made its way inside me, like it was constricting my insides. "You coming in?" a voice called, out to break me out of my haze. "Yeah," I replied instinctively, and moved towards the elevator. It was precisely at this moment that I noticed the stretcher, and resting on top of the body bag, I hesitated for a moment, but I noticed the annoyance on the face of the orderly, and I hurried on in. So there I was, in an enclosed space, riddled with anxiety, a corpse only inches from me, and I had to act like everything was fine. Fortunately, the ride was short, only one floor until freedom. Ding, the elevator called out as it reached the first floor. I hurried out, and the orderly wheeled past me with a chuckle. I took in a long breath as I tried to regain my composure. It wasn't working. It took several minutes of me breathing in and out before I could continue on with my original intent. I purchased a soda and some chips and took an extended break. I finished my day out and went home, where I immediately turned in for a nap. I felt exhausted and my insides felt all knotted up. I must have been feeling worse than I thought because I ended up sleeping for 10 hours straight. I woke at 3 a.m. in a confused state. Work was still 3 hours away, so I decided to play some games until I had to go. I arrived at work and started to get the carts ready for breakfast service. My superior approached. "Hey, you okay?" she asked with concern. "I'm fine," I replied without really paying her any mind. "You don't look fine." She pressed the issue, much to my annoyance. "I ain't no big deal, just feeling under the weather," I muttered in hopes that my confession would be sufficient. "You ought to go home if you're not feeling well." I know she only had my well-being in mind, but I was hoping she would just let me be. "I'll think about it, but I doubt I will. Begging your pardon, but I gotta get this breakfast out. We got hungry folks waiting." I pushed the first cart out the kitchen and to the correct floor. I knew it was early, but I just wanted to be free from the situation. I worked at my usual pace until I realized the floor that was coming next. The last cart I had to deliver was hospice, and I had to say that I wasn't looking forward to it. And ding! The elevator answered my call quickly. I entered and pressed the button for the 8th floor. Dread washed over me in waves as the elevator moved from floor to floor. I reached the 8th floor and the doors opened. I waited for the people to pull in and suffocate me, but it never did. I pushed the cart out into the hallway, was greeted by the head nurse. "Morning, hon," she voiced with a smile. For having lost a patient, she seemed awfully upbeat. It wasn't what I expected at all. The whole atmosphere was light. Didn't make much sense. "Morning," I replied and got down to work. My first stop was, of course, the cancer patient. "Hello, young man," he greeted me as usual. I waved a greeting, thus completing our routine. "What's on the menu?" he asked in a jovial tone. I lifted the insulated lid off the tray. "French toast and bacon, I reckon. At least that's what it looks like." This was the most I had ever said to this old man, and it seemed to catch him off guard. I was starting to think you could only speak one word at a time. He chided as he rose from his chair to get his food. "I just ain't got much to say," I replied, as I hurried out of the room before I could be roped into a full-on conversation. Head nurse laughed as I made my way down the hall. "Uncomfortable with death, are you?" she voiced with a smile. "It's quite natural, ain't it?" I retorted. "I guess so." She adjusted her glasses as she eyeballed the chart. "You become a little immature when you worked this floor as long as I have." I resisted the urge to carry on with the conversation, but in the end I caved. "How do you deal with it?" I mean, it's got a weigh on you, don't it? I meant that figuratively and literally. It happens over time. You just gotta accept it and try to make these folks feel as comfortable as you can. If you're afraid, they're gonna be afraid. It sounded reasonable enough, but I just didn't feel like I could get over that feeling from the day before. I grabbed the next tray and headed towards my next room. "That room is empty, hon," the nurse called out, and I stopped. This was a room that the patient had died in. Sent a shiver through my body. The nurse laughed at my blunder, and I finished my work. It'd be a while before I would feel that feeling again, almost 6 months to be exact. The elevator doors opened once again, and in poured that invisible feeling. I rushed out into the hallway before the claustrophobia set in again. I saw the nurses conjugating by the door at the end of the hallway. Immediately, I knew that someone had passed away. Electing to mind my own business, I carried out my duties. It was my job, after all. "It's a shame," the older gentleman's voice as I walked in. I knew what he meant, but by no means was I in the conversation he was trying to have. He was given longer to live than me. He was persistent. "It was his time," I blurted out. "He wasn't ready," was all he managed to say before I set the tray down and made my way out of the room. I continued down the hall past the room of the first patient that had died and still had not been occupied yet. It felt like it still was. always felt like someone was watching me from within, waiting for me to deliver their meal. As I reached the end of the hall, the feeling intensified, felt tangible, like it held a physical property to it. I delivered the last tray and made my way off the floor. I went outside for a smoke break. I wasn't a smoker, but that job made me one for the time I was there. I looked up at the hospital building from across the street, and that's where the smoking section was, and looked towards the eighth floor. The window to the first dead patient's room caught my eye. Someone was there looking out of the window. I finished my cigarette, headed back to handle lunch, made my way to the eighth floor, and got right to work. Feeling remained, but I tried to ignore it. I walked by the room where I had seen the person from outside. The door was closed. I didn't bring a tray for whoever is in this room. I can order one if you like, I told the head nurse, who gave me a quizzical look. That room hasn't been filled, darling, she replied. I saw someone up there about an hour ago. There had to be a reasonable explanation, or so I hoped. We locked it early this morning. It's going to be remodeled. Ain't no way anyone got in there. I've been here all morning. That wasn't what I was hoping to hear, but I had to accept it at face value. You aren't the first to see something on this floor. The night nurses see things all the time. They're harmless, though. She seemed quite sure of herself. How do you figure, I questioned. I reckon they'd hurt someone by now. Some people just aren't ready to go when they're called. I could accept that. This place had been full of people that were full of fear and uncertainty. You can be a pretty good judge of your own life, and maybe your conclusion leads to doubt as to where you would go after this life. This place full of those unfortunate enough to require end-of-life care afforded the one thing that was both a blessing and a curse. Time. A time to spend with those closest to you, but a time to reflect and a time to regret, and most importantly, the time to fear. Without a word, I returned to my work. Thoughts of just how many people had passed away on the floor filled my head. Just how many had lingered and for how long. It ate away at me, and I found myself obsessed about it. The next day, I sped through my morning prep and hurried through the other doors. I wanted to go to the hospice floor. I had questions. I arrived at the hospice floor and quickly made my way out of the elevator. There was no heavy feeling, which relayed to me that everyone was still alive. Hey, the young man, the old man called to me as I entered his room to deliver his breakfast. I waved my greeting and quickly finished up my work so I could talk to the head nurse. Something on your mind, darling? She asked as I approached her kiosk. You've been here a while, right? I questioned as I leaned forward. She nodded in response as she continued jotting down something on a notepad. So what exactly do people see up here? I questioned. Not much worth talking about. Shadows here and there. The call button in empty rooms going off. Televisions turning on by themselves. I won't hang my hat on it, but all being supernatural, we work long hours and little sleep. Sometimes we ain't in our right mind. She talked about it so nonchalantly. I imagine working in this place would make you a little jaded. I guess that could be a reason for that stuff, but she shook her head and cut me off. I don't go stirring the pot. We got some delicate-minded folks up here, and we don't need any more reason to feel bad about working up here. Just let things be. I nodded, like a scolded child. I didn't realize that not everyone was as fascinated as I was about this. I didn't want to pick at any old wounds either. Thanks for talking to me. I made my way back to the kitchen and started getting ready to do the prep work for the dinner service. Time marches on as it's one to do, and I continued to go on to that floor despite the negative feelings that came over me from time to time. I think it was about 3 months after my talk with the head nurse that this event occurred. I exited the elevator to the hospice floor and immediately ran into a veritable wall of that suffocating feeling. The floor was thick with it, or at least that's what it was like to me. The thing was, I didn't see nurses hanging around any room like they'd been before. I thought that someone had died earlier and that mess had already been dealt with. I thought to ask was in poor taste, so I just carried on with my work. Hey, son, fine day today, isn't it? The older man spoke to me as was his way. Same as yesterday, I replied, matter-of-factly, as I set the tray on his table. Maybe you ought to do something to change that. He shot back in that positive way that he did. I walked away from the room a bit grumpy that he would attempt to tell me how to live my life. I finished up my breakfast service and went out for a smoke. Again, my vision was drawn to the eighth floor where I saw the older man in his window looking out over the city. I was still a bit miffed at him, so I averted my gaze as I finished my smoke. Lunchtime rolled around and I went back to the hospice floor again and almost bowed over by negative feeling. I stepped out into the hall, where I was immediately greeted by the head nurse. The patient in room 801 passed away this morning. I was a bit startled by this revelation, as I'd just spoken to him that morning. He seemed fine when I dropped off breakfast. I responded as I was hit with a realization that in my own way I had grown fond of this man. He was a cheerful constant in my life, and now it was gone. The nurse looked a bit taken back. He passed away early this morning before breakfast. We didn't find him until after you left. This time, I was the one taken back. No way, I talked to him this morning. I recalled that he was sitting in his chair that morning, like he'd always been. Sorry, hon, but he was found in his bed. Doctor said he'd been dead for a few hours. Couldn't believe what I was hearing, and in my disbelief, I went into his room. I'd just seen him. There was no way he could have been dead. His room was stripped of everything, save his bed and chair. The mattress had been removed, however. The fluorescent lights had been stripped down. The room reminded me that this was indeed a hospital room. I looked around, still in shock. As I let my eyes wander, I noticed something. The shadow his chair cast was odd. I stepped forward to get a better look, and immediately stopped. In the shadow of the chair was the shadow of a figure sitting on the chair. It was quite obvious, human form. I noticed that it sat in the chair much like the old man had. I felt overwhelmed by emotion, and as I stared at the shadow, he was doing as he had done in life, sitting and looking outside. I could feel my eyes well up with tears, and I sniffed. The moment was surreal and full of beauty. Then the shadow started to stand up from the chair, and the atmosphere of the room quickly changed. My emotion turned to fear as the shadow stood up completely. It was facing me. It was obvious in the shadow. I stood frozen for a moment until a single event shook me. The shadow took a step forward, like it was coming towards me. That was all I needed. I turned and ran out of the room, leaving my job undone. Got in the elevator, rode it down to the first floor, where I clocked out and went home. I won't bore you with the details of what happened afterwards, but I transferred departments so I wouldn't have to go back to that floor. I don't know why I got so scared. I imagine that realizing that it knew I was there in the room with it, that it was coming towards me, stirred some sort of fight-or-flight response. I hope that he's not just sitting in that room waiting for me to return so we can have some interaction. In all the time I knew him, he never had a single visitor other than doctors and nurses. I still regret walking out of that room when the shadow got up and often wonder if I were to return, if he would be waiting in the chair to ask me about the weather. Well, there it is. I'll write in again sometime soon. I pondered calling, but I'm a better writer than orator. I don't sound as hick with a pen as I do vocally. Y'all have a good one.
You know, I almost think that maybe that older man was waiting to say goodbye, since he was kind of the only visitor he really had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other than the nurses, which nurses don't, at that stage of the game, don't usually mean happy visits. They're not bringing you food. They're usually bringing you medicine or shots or something. So,
sure.
You know, I'm thinking that maybe that was his point. He was just trying to hang on to say goodbye,
mm-hmm,
and didn't mean to scare.
Yeah. And he was able to leave him with like one happy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, where he said, you know, why don't you change that?
Yeah.
You know, and he in the past had not ever given life advice.
Mm-hmm.
And as simple of life advice as it is, it's a good rule just to live life by.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was a point to it.
Yeah.
So, good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. Always appreciate stories from Jesus. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
We have I appreciate everyone who writes in, but sometimes we have a handful of writers that submit a lot of stories to us, and they're great.
Mm-hmm.
they're just some of the greatest. And you know what? It's kind of, I think it's awesome because it increases, would you say, the level of stories that we get in. It kind of raises the bar.
I think it does. And I think maybe some of the people out there that think, oh, well, my story's too long, it's going to be a book.
Yeah. No, we want that.
Yeah.
Write the story. Share it with us. No matter what you think it is, in your own words, you know, we'd love to hear it.
And, you know, I think one of the things, just as an example, Jesus and Oscar and some of our mm-hmm. other authors, they put so much detail into setting up the situation
mm-hmm.
that, you know, really and truly the paranormal part was just the very last part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole buildup just set the story so much. And that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And you can picture it in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really can. Thank you for writing in to all of our writers this week. We do greatly appreciate it. Thank you for being an EPP, supporting the show, keeping us on the air. We could not do this thing without you. Please continue your support. We absolutely love you guys. Thank you so much for being EPPs. That wraps up EPP 106. I haven't said 106 since I was on 106 KHQ.
I was going to ask you which station.
10 years. Well. And it's weird because in my mind, I hear when I say that out loud because I don't say that. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I'm saying it. And I have to follow it with call letters. But there you go. EPP 106. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for being an EPP of Real Ghost Stories Online.